This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today for lunch, my kids are getting string cheese and a whole bag of frozen peas. I'm salvaging whatever I can from the remnants of my fridge and freezer as we head into a third day without power and have finally accepted the fact that we're just going to have to let most of that stuff go. How about you? As of this morning, there were still more than 17,000 homes and businesses in Vermont still without power, and power companies are warning that it could be the end of the week before everyone sees their electricity restored. Here to talk about how this is all working is Green Mountain Power spokesperson Kristen Carlson. Hi, Kristen. Nice to talk with you.
Well, good morning, Jane. Sorry to hear that you're without power, and I feel bad for your kids having a pea lunch.
Hey, they love peas, so okay. It's not a problem.
They're better than my kid.
But, you know, one of the questions that has come up for people is, you know, this seemed like not a huge storm, but there were a lot of trees down, but so many power outages. But I mean, people can't remember as far back as they think of storms being without power for a whole week. What was different about this storm?
So this storm was pretty unique. And to all your listeners who don't have power, we understand how frustrating that is. We have frontline crews who also are without power, who are going to repair the lines, then going to their homes and also not having power. This storm was very unique in terms of the widespread coverage. I talked to Mike Burke, who leads our line workers and our distribution system and is leading the restoration effort, and he can never remember in his whole career at Green Mountain Power a time when that many customers were out at one point. And so this storm, usually what we're able to do is if you look at sort of our coverage area or all of the state of Vermont is you can pull resources from other spots. So if Sunderland is hit hard, you can send crews down from Colchester. If we're hit hard and Vermont Electric Co-op is not, they can send resources our way or vice versa. This, when you looked at the outage map, hit statewide. And then if you zoom out, Jane, it gets even more challenging because it hit the whole region. So we have a mutual aid system where generally we can pull on resources from the Northeast or from Canada. And we did have external crews here on site. But once the storm hit and it hit harder than forecasted, the ability to get those extra crews locked up because the states in Connecticut and Maine needed their own resources in Canada. So what's hopefully going to improve for customers is that we have about 100 line workers who arrived today. And again, so that's the other unique thing is they're coming from Pennsylvania. They're coming from Ohio. They're coming from further than we would typically draw from. So they left when we said we needed them, and they're arriving here today. So in terms of the restoration, we had originally predicted it would take till Saturday to get everyone back on. Because we're making progress and with these additional crews, we should have everyone back on by Friday, if not sooner. And we'll have several thousand more back on today. We're down to about 7,000 out at this point.
What was the peak for GMP?
So I don't have the exact peak number. I do know that in terms of how many homes and businesses we've restored, it's over 111,000. So in terms of the number of outages, this is the worst storm that our frontline crews can remember in recent history.
Yeah, and looking at statewide totals, it appears something like 70,000 homes and businesses without power at the peak across the state, and something like 175,000 people. And it's not just Green Mountain Power, obviously. Let's get some details from one of the other utilities in the state that's struggling with the same issues. Patty Richards is general manager at Washington Electric Cooperative. Hi, Patty. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having us, and hope you get power on soon.
Thanks, and, you know, not your fault. So I understand. I'm glad that progress is being made. And, you know, in terms of what you're seeing and some of the challenges, Kristen laid out this issue with, you know, statewide storm, regional storm, people without power. My parents were without power in Maine until yesterday. So all of these resources really stretched. Are there more challenges if you're a smaller electric cooperative, or is it pretty much the same as what Kristen was talking about?
So I thought Kristen really laid it out well. I mean, this is a regional storm. It's not just a localized Vermont issue. And in terms of Washington Electric Co-op, we're a really, really rural area that we serve. Dirt roads are the thing for Washington Electric Co-op. And yesterday I was in the field for most of the day. And I got to tell you, it's, you know, basically tracking down. We had 150 different breaks on the line. So think of that as we literally have to go find each place where there's a problem on the line. And some of the places we're going are, you know, on dirt roads, but then the line travels through the woods off the dirt road, and our crews have to hike through the woods and check out the lines and scope them to figure out, okay, what's causing this fuse to open. And it's just been labor intensive and just really slow work because there's just so many trees down throughout the 41 towns we serve. It's all over the place. It's an epic storm.
You told us that if you were going to be on the show today, we had to call you and call you quickly because the phone is ringing off the hook. And even for the general manager, it's all hands on deck that's ringing off the hook for you?
Yep, absolutely. We have roughly 40 technical staff outside in the field, and then we have about 15 folks inside the building. But we're literally answering the phone. The phones are ringing off the hook here, and everybody is answering the phone. We're taking emails, trying to, you know, reach out to you folks and get the word out with the press, you know, giving people information that are without power has been a challenge, and everyone is calling in multiple times. For our service territory, we have 11,000 member owners, and at the peak, we had 7,600 out of power. That's over 60% of our entire customer base. So it's definitely overwhelming, and people are calling in, you know, multiple times. The phones are definitely just, they're ringing.
So is the question just, when am I going to get power back? Is that what you keep hearing?
Yeah, and we're trying to explain in terms of, you know, if we have an idea that they're going to be offline for at least another day or two, we're trying to prepare people for that. We're not, you know, full information is really important here so people can plan. So if it looks like we're not going to get, especially the remote areas, we're not going to get there, we're telling them to plan for at least a day or two without power so they can seek emergency shelter, find friends that have power. It's just really important to give the information to folks so they can plan accordingly.
Right. It's sort of under promise and over deliver. You never want to tell people they're going to have power sooner than you can actually get it to them.
That's exactly it.
So can I ask you financially how this impacts a company like Washington Electric Cooperative? Because, you know, as a power customer, I pay for my power when I use it, but I can't use it, obviously, if I'm out for a week, which means less revenue coming into the company from all of these customers who aren't using electricity because they can't, plus all of this work, which I assume is sort of built into how you operate. But is there a financial hit that you take in a storm like this?
So for cooperatives and the not-for-profit municipalities, if the storm is large enough, we can get assistance from the federal government through the FEMA aid. And I'm pretty certain that this will trigger a FEMA declaration here. Our largest storm that we had was just 4 years ago, was Storm Damon in 2014. And this is going to, I believe this is going to exceed that. So we're pretty sure, and you're spot on, that obviously when the power's off, we're not going to be collecting revenue during that time period. But the restoration process is a real big ticket item, and we'll be spending millions of dollars on restoring power, but we'll get help from the federal government in terms, because we're a not-for-profit, and to help us fill that gap, at least partial help.
Patty Richards is general manager at Washington Electric Cooperative. Patty, I want to make sure I'm not tying up your line for too long. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having us.
So Kristen Carlson with Green Mountain Power is still with us. Is that the same in terms of the finances for what happens in a storm like this?
So, yes. And one quick thing I want to touch on quickly, and then I'll answer that question, is we have, you know, Patty mentioned the number of events or breaks in the line. We have about 3,100 of those in our service territory. And think, you know, a general storm might have closer to 100 or 120. And so when we put those restoration times in, it's taking into effect how much time it's going to take for that line crew to put the power back on. So some damage might take 2 hours. We're hearing from the frontline crews that there's 7 broken poles in one span, and that could take them 12 hours. And to Patty's point, so we don't qualify for federal aid. Obviously, when people don't have power, they're not paying for the power. We're trying to really focus on storm restoration, but early estimates, if you look back on other bad storms that we've experienced, are probably in the $15 to $20 million price range.
When it comes to how you prioritize how to get the power back on, how do you think about it? You know, do you think we can get the biggest hit to the most people here, or do you think, well, we need to get to this school and this senior living facility to make sure they have power, or is it this one's an easier fix, so let's just do that? I mean, how do you figure out how to go about doing it when it's this widespread?
So we have a pretty, what I would say is a pretty tried and true and efficient way to return power. So our top priority is sort of those critical safety needs. So we try to get power onto hospitals, schools, senior living facilities. People are on our critical care list who maybe need oxygen. So we have
that. You mean individual customers? You would know that.
Yes. We actually have a list, and in this storm. To Patty's point, it is all hands on deck. We have about 500 employees. Everyone is out in the field. Everyone is taking calls. Some people are delivering water, going door to door to let people know who might be on out with without power for another day or two. But when it comes to deciding that, also think about the system sort of as a spider web. So if you're at the very end of that web or that spoke and the crews restore your power, it's not going to get you power back because there's more damage and breaks up the line. So generally then, once we sort of deal with critical urgent safety needs, sparking wires, live wires, we go for the largest population centers. So when the storm started, you're restoring power to thousands. So one repair might bring back power to thousands downtown, and then they can work down the line to get people on. So the idea is to get safety first and then the most people. And that's why if you live at the end of the line, I know there's a lot of frustration and we understand it's frustrating to be without power. You are on the end of that line. And even if we could leapfrog you and make your repair, it still wouldn't restore your power.
Right, because it still has to get to the...
It still has to connect to the grid and connect back. And the other question we've gotten, Jane, is I have power and my neighbor doesn't have power. Why is that? That doesn't make sense to me. And the reason is that the way our lines feed and serve communities doesn't follow town lines. So one might come from one substation in a different town and one might come from another.
We got a note from Jordan in Cornwall who doesn't have power yet and is, frustrated, as you said, Kristen, so many people are, who says, I have driven all over Addison County. I haven't seen a single Green Mountain Power truck. I'm sure they're out there somewhere, but where?
Okay, so first of all, Jordan, so sorry you don't have power. Hopefully you're able to listen to this program. I can guarantee that we have an army of folks out there. We are in Addison County working tremendously hard. They might be on back roads where you can't see them. Feel free to email or call me and we can let you know where crews are. We're providing updated restoration times today through text alerts, so people should see updated restoration times.
If they've signed up for text alerts?
Yes, if they've signed up for text alerts. We're also providing press releases, social media. So like Patty, we're trying to get out as much information as possible, but understand we're making progress, but we are out there.
All right. So the bottom line on what you think now in terms of when people should see power restored?
Bottom line is that for all customers, they should be back on by Friday night. There might be one or two stragglers into Saturday, but all by Friday night. Today, we're down to 7,400 homes and businesses without power. We're going to restore thousands and thousands today. Today in the daylight with the extra crews from out of state, we're going to make a ton of progress. And so we should have a lot of people on today, but all should be back on by Friday, if not sooner.
Kristen Carlson is VP for Strategic and External Affairs at Green Mountain Power. Kristen, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane.